I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. We have a quorum present, and Representative Lencheski told him before the meeting started that she was studying the minutes.
I was.
So would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the minutes of April 22nd.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We're starting a little earlier than we normally do, but that's because we have session at 10 and we have two bills that are before us this morning. And in the end, what the plan is to combine these two bills into one pension bill. So we will hear the first bill, Senate File 489, and take any amendments to it, and then lay that one over and hear the second bill, take any amendments, and then we'll combine them into one bill. So the chair moves that Senate File Senate File 489, the second engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Representative Murphy, would you care to begin the overview? And I know you have Mr. Martin with you.
Mr.
Chair. Oh, wait a minute. Excuse me. We got to insert the House language. We're not taking the Senate bill. Okay. That's my... the chair moves the to delete everything after the enacting clause and insert the language from House File 629, first engrossment. That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
And
then we have that amendment. Would you like to have that moved now as well?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay, then the chair moves that the amendment 629-5A be moved. And would you care to mention anything about that amendment before we vote? Then Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the amendment primarily deals with the Article 1, which is about the swaps. And in Government Operations Committee, Representative Pepin and O'Driscoll had questions. Representative O'Driscoll wasn't on the committee, or well, maybe he was. Anyway, Representative O'Driscoll had brought to the attention of Representative Pepin that he had questions about the securities. And Representative Albright was also aware of the amendment, and Representative Benson. And as a result of their questions and the conversation that took place in government op, the Section 1 of the amendment was adopted as a substitute for what had been Section 1. And this is brings the swaps.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, do we have exactly what amendment we're talking about?
Yeah, it's the 5A. Yeah. And it's been moved.
And Mr. Chair, the new Dodd-Frank regulations allows the SBI, State Board of Investment, to enter the swap market because all trades will be cleared centrally on an exchange regulated by the United States government, and contracts will be standardized with transparent pricing. Contracts will have standardized margin requirements, and contracts will be marked to market daily. The SBI will use the swaps to rebalance and reduce risk in the portfolio, not to speculate. The SBI is not allowed to leverage its portfolio, and all investments entered into by the State Board of Investments are governed by the prudent person standard of fiduciary conduct. And that is the summary of the amendment that was worked out, especially with the help of Howard Bicker of the State Board of Investments, Representative O'Driscoll, Benson, Albright, and Pepin, and I very much appreciate their input. The other part, large part of the amendment, Section 57, is continuing provisions that are current law, but needs to be included in this amendment for ongoing City of Minneapolis participation. So I fully support this amendment.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay.
Okay, now on the bill as amended.
Okay. Article 1, as I said, deals with the swap contracts through a recognized market. Article 2, with respect to retirement plans administered by Minnesota State Retirement Board, contribution rate revision provisions are revised and expanded authority is granted to retain medical advisors. Annual earnings reporting are required to be provided by disabilitants. And obsolete and outdated plan requirements are clarified. Article 3 is for PERA administrated retirement plans, and it talks clarifies some federal Internal Revenue Code requirements, and it approves a privatization benefit coverage for privatized hospitals is delegated to the PERA board, and the Social Security leveling optional annuity form is repealed. Previously, we had had to have a bill every time a hospital or nursing home went private to keep their employees into PERA. Now the board is going to be able to do that. Article 4 is a book or housekeeping for the revisor of statutes office. Article 5 regulates relating local police and paid fire relief associations, obsolete language, consolidations over the period 1987 to 2012 are repealed and cross-references are revised and updated. Article 6 deals with municipalities with fire departments seeking to join the statewide volunteer fire plan. They are given a longer period of time to approve the request. Also, White Bear Lake is authorized to pay a funeral benefit to some older current retirees. And was there one individual case in that?
No.
No. Okay. Article 7 deals with a state employee from Northfield and a current Wright County employee. They're authorized to purchase previous service credit. And Article 8 deals with the state auditor's office, and the state auditor will provide periodic information on the investment opportunities with the State Board of Investment about benefit coverage opportunities with the statewide volunteer fire retirement plan. That concludes.
Okay,
that's a brief outline
the overview on the on the bill. Any questions? As I mentioned earlier, we'll be, now that we've heard it, amended it, we'll be laying it over temporarily to incorporate it with the other bill. Okay, seeing no questions, then we'll lay this bill over, and we'll need to take up the next bill. The chair moves that House File 1152, the first engrossment. And then we have an amendment on this one as well. Representative Murphy?
We do, Mr. Chair. Pension Bill 2 is a little more complicated and controversial, perhaps, than the housekeeping bill of Pension 1. But it is very necessary at this time. We are trying to bring solvency measures to the various pension plans that are in Pension 2. And on our way, the governor got involved. And 8A amendment deals with a study that the plan directors have to do for the teachers, St. Paul, Duluth, and TRA, the Teachers of Minnesota, have to come up with a report to the legislature and governor by January 6th of 2014 to talk about how plans can be merged together. So, and also the second part deals with the judiciary appropriations that we're asking to be in here because they weren't included in the judiciary finance bill, and the public safety ongoing costs to the committee because they weren't included in the public safety bill. So we're asking them to be included here so they'll get put in the base for future years.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? That's the 1152-8A amendment, author's amendment. Representative Murphy? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Murphy?
Okay. Thank you very much. Omnibus Retirement Bill 2 deals with the solvency, as I said, the solvency of the plans. We are increasing contributions of employers and employees. We are having savings, reducing liabilities, or lowering liabilities for each of the plans. Article 1 deals with the state patrol solvency measures. Article 2 defines salary for PERA. Article 3 is the PERA police and fire solvency measures. Article 4 is TRA. They're trying to have early retirement reduction factors so that there's more of a balance and perhaps not as much difference between people leaving when they're still eligible for Rule of 90, and maybe they'll stay till they're 63 or 64 instead of going at 57 with some of these factors that won't tilt so much. Article 5 deals with Duluth teachers, Minneapolis teachers, Duluth teachers, and St. Paul teachers, solvency. Article 6 deals with the judges' retirement solvency measures. Article 7 is a voluntary membership dues deduction. And Article 8 is, again, more language for the judiciary and public safety language. That concludes my brief overview. If there are questions, we will attempt to answer.
Okay.
There are people in the room that knows every answer.
Yes, and Mr. Martin is at the table. As Representative Murphy pointed out, pensions can be a complex area, and Mr. Martin is with the Pension Commission. So any discussion? Representative Hulbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, are any of the plans in your bills getting increased benefits?
Representative Murphy.
Representative Hulbert, Duluth has, there's one increased benefit for Duluth. They have been at zero COLA. This is the third year they have not received, their beneficiaries have not received a COLA. 3 years ago, they said, we have to lower our liabilities. And they went to zero. And for equity, they are asking to go up to 1%. Because all the others are at 1%.
And Representative Hulbert.
Mr. Chair, what percent of funding does that plan have?
Now?
Representative Murphy. Or Mr. Martin.
Members, I'm Larry Martin from the Legislative Pension Commission. Currently, the Duluth Teachers Plan is 63.4% funded. Total liabilities about $326 million, assets of about $207
million. Right, thank you.
Hey, Representative Hackbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not sure if Representative Murphy can answer this question or maybe somebody in the audience, maybe from PERA. But I understand that, you know, it's a bill that's trying to fix some problems that we're facing, and I understand that, and I think it's a good thing to do. But there are some consequences here. And I think it's article or let's see, yeah, article 3 for the police. It's been brought to my attention by some officers and some retired officers, particularly ones that are in this legislature, okay, that are concerned that when we have this drop dead date of when we're going to start to change things, that there's going to be an issue with all of a sudden. Officers between 50 and 55 years old are going to be retiring. Because if they stay longer after the date you've got built into the bill, their pension benefits will be reduced. So they're going to be retiring before that drop-dead date, and we'll have a whole bunch of particularly out-state officers that will be retiring, police departments, sheriff's departments, etc. And my question is, what are we thinking in... How are we going to replace those officers? And what's going to be the result of all these officers retiring, and what effect is that going to have on the fund when they're all going to be retiring before that drop-dead date? And then how are we going to replace those officers? Do we have enough people that are waiting in the wings for those jobs? So that's my concern, and I wonder if we have an answer, if there's somebody from PERA that might have those answers.
We do.
I,
Mr. Chair, Ms. Vanek from PRA.
And if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Mary Vanek. I'm the director of PERA. We are currently working with our actuary to do a study on some different scenarios of how many members of the Police and Fire Fund may retire before the effective date of these changes. However, I'm concerned about the fact that there's a lot of misinformation in the community. We do need to make these changes. Early retirement is the biggest stressor on our plan right now because we so heavily subsidize the value of that benefit. The plan membership, the assets in the plan, which used to be over 100% when this reduction for early retirement was lowered so significantly, with the expectation that those excess assets would pay for that additional cost to the plan. Contributions were also lowered at exactly the same time. So we were collecting far less money than the benefits that people were earning. And it seemed reasonable at the time because we were 126% funded. So there was a combination of things that occurred. Assets that were extra in the plan were subsidizing benefits in the plan. Contributions were lower than needed to be to pre-fund existing members' benefits. Excess assets were being used for that purpose. And contributions coming in were not sufficient to fund those plans. So it all culminated in when the Great Recession hit, the plan put went into a position where it began deteriorating. Changes we made in 2010 helped, but a study a year and a half ago disputes what members believe, and that is the fact that members are living far longer than the rumors in the community. At 55, they do not only live 18 months. They live 20-plus years, many of them over 25 years. People retiring at age 50 right now are projected to live 32 to 35 years. We are paying them a heavily subsidized benefit for a period of time longer than they contributed to the plan. That is a structural deficiency in the plan that needs to be corrected. I understand, Representative Hackbarth, the concern in the community. I hope that we have an opportunity to educate members that this is a slow phase-in of a change in this early retirement. It is not as impactful as people believe. They believe it's going to go from 1.2% a year to 5% immediately. That is not the case. The effective date is delayed a year. It's a gradual phase-in over 60 months. And as members' salaries increase and they get additional credit for working longer, the impact is not what I think a lot of people believe it is right now. When staff members have an opportunity to talk to individual members, they get a better picture of what it is. Will it affect folks? Absolutely it will. If they had a target date of retiring at 52, 2 years from now, and their salary is relatively stable, it will impact them, but I don't think as significantly as many of them believe. It is a very necessary step we take with this plan to stabilize it. And I do know in working with the Minnesota Police Officers Association and the Firefighters statewide organization, the Chiefs of Police Association, the Sheriff's Association, yes, there are concerns about filling positions. I hope that we have a good dialogue this summer about addressing that, but this is a very necessary provision in stabilizing this plan, so I hope that we get your support on it.
Representative Hepburn.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I do support this issue, and I do believe it does need to be changed. I think you're doing a good thing here, but there is a concern, an underlying concern, that I don't think that we've really addressed or talked about or studied or tried to figure out. How many people are there that are going to be retiring? No doubt about it, it is going to affect them, like you said. They are going to get less benefits after that date. And this is a concern with a lot of firefighters, police officers that are going to be retiring. They just are. And when that date comes, they're gone. And do we have people to replace them? And that's the concern that I have. Do we have officers to replace them? That's what I think we need to look at, and sometimes we do some of these pension things and don't think about some of the consequences that are going to come from it. So I know there's a lot of people in school right now that are waiting for jobs like that, and sometimes there's too many people that go to school and that are out looking for those jobs. But this is going to be an area where at a particular time where we're going to be looking for officers, and I don't think we're going to have enough to replace them.
That sounds like a good topic to perhaps have with the Minsky system or the post board. Mm-hmm. You know, they would be the ones that maybe would monitor the number of people that are going through the various training programs. I do know that there was a period where it was hard. I don't know what it is currently, but there was a period where if you went through one of the programs like at Alexandria Tech and other places, that it was hard to find a position in police work. They were often taking positions in private industry in the general area of public safety, even though their goal was to be a police officer. But I don't know where we are with that currently. So Representative Hackbarth does raise a good question that probably should be pursued. Were you done, Representative Hackbarth?
I'm done.
Okay,
Mr. Chair,
Anderson.
To that point, Representative Hackbarth, I too have received some information from individuals that are very concerned. And I think that bringing it up here was very helpful, and we will continue to try to follow up on gaining more information, but I think that it's something that Senator Pappas is putting, creating a list for interim, and I will put that on the list for interim discussion also, and so some of those people could have the opportunity to come and voice their concern or worry about what's going to happen, because you're right.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. I'm looking at the teacher portion of this, and I'm just concerned here. I know, I believe in the past we've been advised as a legislative body that we should be around an 85 to 90% funded level. And as I look through the charts, TRA is currently at 72%, Duluth teachers are at 63%, and then the St. Paul teachers are at 61%. Obviously, adding them into the TRA fund is going to drop that 72% funded level. And I'm just wondering what in your bill addresses the issue of the fact that they are severely underfunded, and this puts us at risk of not being able to pay out the benefits that these people have been promised.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, the appropriation. Representative Anderson, there's an appropriation in the bill. And
but it doesn't, Mr. Chair. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Memory.
And hopefully, you know, it's so hard because in 2007, 2008, they were 96% funded. And so this has happened quickly, 2008 to 2012, and those are the figures that we're using. For over 100 years, they've received very, very little aid in comparison to some of the other state plans. And they're asking for help now. I think they are committed to continue to do their very best with the investments and to go forward. And we have that amendment in there that we have to have actuarial financial report by next year of the costs for the future submitted to the legislature and to the governor. And the $6 million for Duluth and $7 million for St. Paul on an annual basis will bring a stabilization. But that's not the solution. You're right.
Mr. Chair and
Representative Anderson.
Representative Murphy, I'm just wondering what kind of true structural reform, though, are we doing to address this issue so that we don't come back here every single year and we're having to deal with this issue? Because it seems like it's been every single year that we've been going after this. And I'm just kind of wondering what kind of structural reform are we trying to do to alleviate this problem?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, we started in 2008 with the with joining the post-retired plan or funding with the active. In 2010, we had a bill before the legislature, and that's why it seems, which addressed the solvency to some degrees of all the plans. And then in 2012, we addressed it again. And now we're again decreasing, coming before you with plans to decrease the liabilities for the plans again. Hopefully, and this isn't an answer, but investments have been good this year. But over a long period of time, I think Mr. Martin might be able to help me talk about more stabilities.
Yeah, and maybe Rep. Sam Murphy, you or Mr. Martin could talk about there's not only the state appropriations, but there's the increased employee contributions as well. I don't know if that's what Representative Anderson was getting at or not.
Yeah, and that's helpful. Mr. Chair, I don't want to take up too much of the committee's time. I just have one last question. I'll talk with Representative Murphy offline on some of these issues. But the other question that I had was, in the amendment language here, you repealed some of the language that was passed back in 2011, and it's on the contribution rate revision. Can you tell me a little bit about what's that changing and what that is about? It would be Minnesota Statutes 352.045, if that helps you at all. The subdivisions 3 and 4.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I understand the question. Is this related to Omnibus 1 or is this related to Omnibus 2? There's no amendment.
This was 352. This was 1, so I apologize if I'm coming late here.
And specifically, Mr. Chair, the provision?
352.045. I'm going to try and find it here in the appendix.
Okay, I see.
If that's one you're still trying to find, maybe we can
it's on page 29.
Take another question and then revert back to that, or it looks like we so do you have that?
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom with the director of the Minnesota State Retirement System. We had a contribution rate trigger in law, and we changed it a little bit, so it is in Omnibus 1. So we just repealed the old one and replaced it with some new language that does two things. One, the new language gives the board authority to increase or not increase contribution rates. The old one required us to increase contribution rates if we met certain triggers. And there may be circumstances where they may say, no, it's maybe not appropriate at this time, just based on what's happening with the market. The other thing that we changed was the old trigger happened very slowly. So if we had a very large deficiency, we could only increase contributions by 0.25% each year. And for example, in our state patrol plan, that plan, it just would never get us there. So it allows us more flexibility. So we repealed the old language and we inserted new language that does very much the same thing, just improves it.
Okay. So better financial management in the end.
Mr. Chair, correct.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, we helped out the Minneapolis schools a few years back when there was a justification that the state had not really fulfilled some of its previous obligations in different times, and that was a justification, and I think one that many of us thought, well, if we had made mistakes in the past, we need to correct them. I say that in regards to I think there may be a possibility of some of that may be true in either Duluth and or St. Paul. I'm not as familiar with those as we became with Minneapolis. What I would ask is as this moves forward, I think we're going to have to hear justification of why the state is doing this, including I'm very troubled by the COLA increase specifically for Duluth at a time when they're funded in the 60%. And I think as we go forward, if you could make us aware of the justification, because the most important part of this is we have to take it in the context of, I think, of a few specific examples in my adult life where we heard just gut-wrenching stories, door-knocking, of people affected in northeastern Minnesota when the Iron Range companies left and abandoned those folks that today are getting well under 50% of their pension that they thought they had. I think of one specific individual I door-knocked that was in his 40s and going to be able to retire, he thought, in about 10 years, and ended up with zero. And he had, at that time, I remember him telling me, "Denny, when I retire, I'll have $1 million. The next time I door-knocked him, he had a new job and said, "I'll have to work for the next 25 years because I have nothing in my pension." I have to door-knock him again next summer, and if I have to tell him that I'm bailing out a couple school districts so he can pay more, I have to have an answer. The airline industry is another one that completely, those folks that worked in that industry not only lost their jobs, but pensions in the well under 50%. I just think we have to be cognizant, and coming from a family where my family earned their living and my dad was a state employee, I knew, he always said, you know, "I make a lot less, but I got a pension and insurance and a job." Well, a couple summers ago, they didn't have a job, so we blew that. Their health insurance, I think they still have. Their pensions, they still have. But the private sector needs to know that we are not giving them something that they don't deserve or have the right to have. So please take that into account. I'm really troubled by us bringing and bailing out this much, and the people that are paying for it, some of them are working for decades longer because of what we're doing or have happened to them. So I know you're a great legislator. You've worked hard on this issue ever since I've been in the legislature. So please, I'm hoping that you'll be able to justify what we're trying to do here, because I think I've always supported all the pension bills. And this one, I'm really troubled merging these two together. So I don't know if you want to make a comment to that, Representative Murphy. It was more just me saying I'm troubled by what some of we see here. And maybe if you could just add something about, is there any justification? Is the state abandoned these two school districts at other times to where I can really justify what we're doing?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I have worked up to this point, and I appreciate your counsel very much. And in the while I was working through the issues on these solvency measures, I thought of the same things that you've mentioned and compared. If we had the benefit of hindsight, we should not have lowered employers' contributions in the 90s, in the good years. We lowered the employers' contributions. And in our finance committees, how many times when we're doing the finance bill at the end of the year or the overviews at the beginning of the year, do we really spend on what the state's contribution should be for your various agencies for maintaining the employer's share of the pension obligation? And in Pension Commission, we have not always, to the degree that we should have, this is all hindsight now, reviewed whether the employer's share for the cities and the counties was adequate. Usually when we have gotten plan solutions, when we've upped the contribution share for employees, sometimes we haven't done an equal amount for the employers, especially in the cases where we were trying to improve one benefit or another for some of the plans. And I don't think we should continue to do that in the future. And obviously we're not going to be, because we have to address the solvency issues in all the plans at this point. But historically, when we've had, historically, since 1885, when a plan has been in trouble, the state has addressed and helped solve the issue. We have not abandoned any plan historically. And sometimes it was just a few years address. Sometimes it's been 20 or 30 years. The thing at this particular time is the culmination of several things that have come together that we had no control of. Accounting, the national accounting standards changed. The assumption rates have changed. The financial situation of the country has changed. But historically, over 17 times since 1885, the state has come to assist. And that's what Duluth and St. Paul and the judges and the police and fire are asking for today. But it won't be over.
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair, to this issue also, just from looking at equity, and Mr. Martin could probably give exact numbers, but I remember in reviewing the history of these plans, the state initially decided to give a lot of supplemental funds. I think it was early 80s, if I remember right, maybe earlier. And then they decided and looked at it, and everybody except the first three first-class cities were determinant, TRA was determinant to need it more, and so they started giving big supplements to them, as I recall, and it, when it got to, and they promised the three first-class cities that they would get a lot of supplement eventually after the others were brought up, and then it started tapering off, and so I don't think Duluth, if I remember right, that very much in the form of that, and maybe Mr. Martin could explain that. But one other point I wanted to make with regard to Representative Hack, and it's gone way gone by, but with regard to Representative Hackbar's point about not having, or about not having as many police in the field in rural Minnesota, I think there's a former legislator from the Iron Range that if you heard that this morning, we'd be all supplied with beer here this morning, probably.
That what you're referencing is TRA in the 80s. I think it was $30 million a year that was put in. And you're correct, the cities of the first class at that point in time were not helped, and that was for a period of several years. Representative Kahn.
First of all, the first thing we have to realize is that the most important component of a pension plan is the investment profile. I think it's investments supply two-thirds as opposed to about the one-third from contributions. And so these stock market crashes have been really caused part of the problem. Of course, the state caused some of the problems for Duluth when it transferred all the community, the kind of growing parts of the market out of the Duluth plan, and the, you know, community colleges and charter school teachers. And Duluth is really being hit by a demographic problem. We do have one thing in the bill, which is something that I've consistently worked on. Probably anyone, most of the people here probably voted against me when I've tried to make it more compulsory. But in Article 8, we're requiring the Office of the State Auditor to provide information to the volunteer firefighter plans with information on the availability of the State Board of Investment to manage their investments and the different returns that they're getting now and the returns they would have if the State Board of Investment would do it. I have been someone who has said that one of the last things we should look at is hoping to achieve full funding of any of these public plans. It's not like a private plan where the public plan is we're going to have teachers in Minneapolis and St. Paul and Duluth. We're not looking at a private company closing down the pension plan. And as we had in the previous testimony, just from my experience of watching this, that the state the worst thing is to be fully funded, because as soon as you get to be fully funded, there are these demands for reduced contributions and increased benefits, which is something that the legislature likes to do much more than put controls or reductions. So I would be much more concerned if we were at 90% funded than if we're at 70% funded. And just to point out that problems used to have simpler solutions in times past. One of the comments on the history of the day is on April 26, 1877, Governor John Pillsbury proclaimed a day of prayer to combat locusts attacking Minnesota crops. So maybe we should proclaim a day of prayer to take care of our pension funds.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Mr. Martin. This bill is looking at $6 million for Duluth. Excuse me. And that currently we're at about 63% of where we should be. $7 million for St. Paul has us at 61%. If this bill was passed as is, what does that put us at for funding? We go from 63 to what and 61 to what?
Mr. Chair, Representative, funding of pension plans is a long-term proposition, and simply increasing the contribution rate in 1 year will have a nominal change in that funding ratio. You would have to appropriate tens or hundreds of millions of dollars to hugely impact that in 1 year. What we're doing is addressing the shortfall in the contribution rates. Getting the contribution rates closer to what is needed to amortize that unfunded accrued liability in the remaining 25 years that we've allocated to amortize the plan. So over the 25 years, with the package of benefit changes, member and employer contribution increases, and state aid, this plan will have contributions that are essentially equal to what its actuarial requirements are, and will be fully funded in 25 years if all the actuarial assumptions work out. But in any 1 year, an extra $6 million when the plan has a $119 million unfunded is going to have a very nominal change in its unfunded accrued liability or its funding ratio.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Martin, so what you're saying is if we pass this bill as is, the projections out 25 years would have these plans 100% funded?
Mr. Chair, yes, if the actuarial assumptions all work out.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Lou.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few questions, and first, just to piggyback on what Representative Davids was asking, what is the assumed rate of return in those actuarial assumptions?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, the interest rate assumption that we use in state statute is 8% for the next 5 years and 8.5 thereafter.
Absimilon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what has been the experience, if you look back, say, over the past or previous 10 years, the actual rate of return for those plans?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to have to defer to Mr. Bicker. I keep a lot of numbers in my head. The rate of return numbers, unfortunately, I don't.
Okay, thank you. If he wants to come down, or I have a couple more questions, if you want me to ask those.
Mr. Bergstrom, do you have that?
Mr. Bicker.
Or Bicker? Mr. Bicker?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Howard Bicker. I'm the Director of State Investment Board. Again, these are long-term plans. Over the last 30-plus years, the State Board of Investment has compounded about 9.9%.
And over the last 10 years?
30.
Okay, but what do you know what it would be over if you looked at just the past 10 years?
Actually, over the last 10 years right now, I think it's actually relatively close to 10% because you are now getting into where you had the market decline in 2001, 2002 as your new base. So, you know, it's you can kind of do whatever you want by moving one quarter one way around or another. That's why we kind of like to look at it over a very longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. Representative Loon.
Thank you. Another question I have, and either to Representative Murphy or whoever wants to address this, Mr. Martin, in looking at sort of the two plans, the Duluth and St. Paul teachers' plans that we're addressing here, and looking at the contribution rates, both for the employees and for the employer, they're different. So information I have shows that, you know, before July 1st of this year, contributions for Duluth teachers is 6.5%, and St. Paul is about 8.75% roughly. So I guess my question is, if we look to rolling these in, are all of these various plans have separate contribution rates for their respective teachers and employers, or is there a plan to sort of have everybody be the same?
Mr. Martin?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, there are differences in the two plans. They do set, Minnesota statutes does set specific member contribution rates for each plan, plan by plan. St. Paul Teachers has a residual group who do not have Social Security, what we refer to as basic members, and have a different formula and have a higher contribution rate as a consequence. Duluth coordinated with Social Security back in the 1950s when it first I was available to public employees, so they're all coordinated, so they all have the same contribution rate, and my memory is that they're identical for St. Paul Teacher Coordinated and Duluth Teacher Coordinated. So the differences that you're seeing is a blended average, taking those our remaining basic members and including them in the overall number for the entire plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, all right. So it takes into account whether or not they are in the Social Security system as well. And okay, and then so the state sets those rates though for each of these groups, and there, if that's not
yes,
something
Mr.
that's
Chair.
Collectively bargained.
Mr.
No, members. An amendment in 1973 to PELRA excludes retirement plan contributions and benefits from the Public Employee Labor Our Relations Act.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if I could have one other question. You know, some of the discussion that was raised earlier about retirement age, and obviously we're talking about some different employment types of employment, whether you're talking about police officers or teachers and that. And, you know, age 50, 52 was thrown around, and I guess the older I get, the younger that sounds. Has there been any discussion in your committee about looking at some of those retirement ages? And, I mean, this is a discussion that spans lots and lots of topics, but, you know, one of the concerns, and I think one of the things we're seeing here with some of these plans, you've got a lot more people retired than you have people actively working and paying in, and, you know, that's going to create a problem, no matter what kind of retirement system you're in. And I guess providing the opportunity, again, depending on the profession, and certainly there's differences with regards to perhaps risk to your life and other things we're looking at, but, you know, full benefits at age 50 or 52 in a lot of professions just seems really unrealistic given how long people are living now. Is there some discussion about making any changes to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The Pension Commission has looked at the question of our retirement ages over time. We have different retirement ages for public safety employees because of the nature of their employment and the fact that they don't have Social Security. They're basic members, so their sole pension is coming from their public employee pension plan. We've done less in looking at the, well, and we also have two different ages, and but the normal retirement age, which is when you get full benefits, and then what is the earliest opportunity you can get an early reduced benefit, and how much is the reduction. Ms. Vanek was talking to you about the impact of having an age 50 early retirement and the reduction for that early retirement not being terribly sufficient, being a problem, something that was modified. It used to be a much greater reduction before, sometime in the early 90s, mid-90s, and was changed during the very good funding years for PRA Police and Fire. For our general employees, the normal retirement age for most current general employee plans, plan members, was increased from 65 to 66 to match the change in Social Security. The early retirement ages have remained typically age 55 or any age with 30 years of service. And again, the reduction factor is the key there, how much of a reduction and how close to full actuarial requirements is that reduction. So yes, the question does come up. It has been addressed periodically. As people live longer, as people's sense of what is a normal working lifespan change, that's a provision that needs to be addressed periodically.
Thank you. One last question, Mr. Chair. So for the Duluth and the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Plan, of those retirees in the plan, do you have any information on what the average age of retirement was when those folks entered in? Is there an overall average for that, for the pool?
Mr. Chair, there undoubtedly is. We have the plan administrators for Duluth and St. Paul here, and they would be able to address that. It's not a number I have on the top of my head. If you would like to have testimony from Mr. Stoffel.
If they have that number, if they'd like to come forward. And if you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jay Stoffel. I'm the director of the Duluth Teachers Fund. Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, I don't have the exact average retirement age maybe that you're looking for, but what I can tell you is in my 21 years of experience at the fund, people are retiring later and later all the time. We are now having retirements very normal, it seems almost regular, at age 59, 60, 61. I would say 10 years ago, people were retiring pretty much on their rule of 90 date, 57, 58 years of age. So the retirement age is definitely creeping up. The rule of 90 is being utilized, but people are not utilizing it on the date that they reach that age. So I think it's a function of cost of health care, other employment opportunities in retirement, 403B balances that are diminished because of a couple of the market crashes, but the experience is definitely older and older, around age 60 for average these days.
And maybe you could share, what is the penalty if you retire early, or the reduction?
In our pre-89 plan, it's 3% a year under the age of 65. And in the post-89 plan, it's an actuarial reduction somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 to 6% per year, depending on the age of the person when they retire.
So that
Representative Lewin, the reason I raised that question, that's a significant reduction if you choose to retire early for whatever reason that you're doing that.
Thank you.
St. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Christine McDonald. I'm the Assistant Director for the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund. And our average age of our teachers retiring depends. In general, it's about age 60, 61. However, we did have a couple of years where the St. Paul School District had an early retirement incentive that adversely affected our fund. What it was, I believe there was some federal funds that allowed the school district to provide early health insurance, early retiree health insurance that kind of reimbursed the school district for the portion they would normally pay if a teacher retired. So we had in 2010 and 2011, we had a significant outflow of people retiring early, and that pushed the ages down to 59 and 58. So that would, I believe, does that address your question?
Representative Loon.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you.
If I may also offer, Mr. Chair, there had been a question about whether the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund had any gaps in state contributions. And in fact, in St. Paul, there was from 1978, when the coordinated plan was created, till 1994, the state did not provide a 4% annual contribution that they had been previously contributing when we only had the basic plan. So we had our basic plan, as Mr. Martin had mentioned, is those individuals who don't have Social Security, their only pension is from the basic plan. In 1978, the coordinated plan was created, and that allowed people to contribute both to Social Security and to the pension plan. What happened is the thought was the coordinated plan is going to be starting from zero. It doesn't need any help. But what it didn't take into account is that we had all those basic plan members that were still going to be needing help in the past. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, what I'll do is lay House File 1152 as amended over, and then we'll begin a few motions to combine the two bills. So the chair moves Senate File 489, the second engrossment, as amended, to put that before us. And then the chair moves that the language contained in House File 1152, first engrossment as amended, be inserted into Senate File 489 as separate articles. So any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. And the final motion, the chair renews his motion that Senate File 489, second engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. Oh, time out. Okay. What is that? We're okay. Okay, I'm told that the motions were all A-OK. Checking with everybody. Don't want to make a mistake when we're dealing with pensions, right? Okay, so any discussion then on the motion that, I'll repeat it again, that Senate File 489, second engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and placed in the general register. That's the motion before us. Representative Kahn.
Before we finish this, I really want to take credit for doing something that stopped making our life much more miserable than it possibly could be, which is I was the first person when I chaired government operations to decide that we wouldn't have 79 separate pension bills. We would have one omnibus pension bill, and Representative Murphy is continuing by combining these, the last bit of combination, putting these two into one. So it's a long process, I'll tell members.
So we can thank Representative Kahn for helping us combine all of this.
For not having 79 separate discussions on pensions.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Murphy, that we're done with that. Now, members.
Thank you.
Just by way of announcement, we will begin meeting on Monday at 9 a.m. We have a fairly lengthy agenda. We have the Winkler bill on minimum wage. We have the Winkler bill on the I-35W bridge, the disposal of the steel. We have the land transfer bill by Representative Erickson. We have the claims bill by Representative Murphy. And then we have the Legislative Water Commission by Representative Fisher. So we have a full morning, and so that we can get the reports up on the House floor. I was asked by two or three people, why are we meeting at 9 o'clock when we're not starting session until 3? And just to remind people, we have the four-hour rule, so that the reports have to be up on the House floor 4 hours prior to the convening of the session. So that's what drove us back to a 9 o'clock start time. So those of you that have to travel, unfortunately, you'll have to start a little earlier, I guess. So the 24-hour rule on amendment supplies, they are due to committee staff by 9 a.m. today. Well, that's a little, that's just okay. You were letting me know that, but okay. But these bills have been posted, so yeah, bills have been posted, so we should be able to meet that rule or requirement. Okay, with that, meeting adjourned.
Okay.